So we're going to be treated right now to a discussion of our first freedom. And I'm so honored to be able to introduce to you a man who really doesn't need any introduction. That sounds so cliche. But in this time of independent councils, we actually have a man of high integrity who served as an independent counsel 5 times, including into Whitewater. And Ken Starr has just been a real hero for truth and justice, a real defender of the First Amendment. And I wanted to really draw your attention to the fact that at 3 o'clock today, he is going to be autographing copies of his new book called Contempt, a memoir of the Clinton investigation. So you're going to want to definitely get a copy of that and keep it with his signature on it, because that's a historical time for us, and unfortunately, it's not the first time that Democrats have needed to be investigated. But Ken Starr, thank you for being here today, and I will turn it over to Ken, who is going to introduce the panel and take it from here. Welcome, Ken Starr.
Thank you. Very kind of you. Good afternoon, everyone. What a great gathering. It's my honor to introduce the panelists and then to say a few, emphasis on few, introductory words, but this is really about the stories and reflections you're about to hear. First, we will hear from Tom Glessner, founder, president, and general counsel of an organization that everyone I think here knows well, the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates. Tom is a lawyer, including a membership in the Supreme Court Bar. And NIFLA, the organization he so ably heads as well as founded, is a legal network of 1,500, count them, pro-life pregnancy centers, which includes 1,200 licensed medical centers. He and his wonderful wife, Laura, live in beautiful Fredericksburg, Virginia, on the banks of the Rappahannock River. Jack Phillips is now someone who needs no introduction. I heard the beginning of applause, but each deserves applause. But Jack is indeed a Colorado native, continues to live in beautiful Lakewood, Colorado, opened Masterpiece Cake Shop in 1993, and he served that community for 25 years. You've heard the Jack Phillips story, but you'll hear a very intriguing perspective from him. Here is one of the most remarkable facts. His children and his grandchildren have been homeschooled in the bakery. That's an applause line. And then one of our very favorite lawyers in the world, Kristen Wagner, who is senior vice president of, yes, I think applause is appropriate in the light of the fact that Kristen begins with today with an enormous amount of credibility because she only wins cases in the Supreme Court of the United States, 8-0, and of course was lead counsel in Masterpiece Cake Shop versus the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. And then she was served as counsel in the great First Amendment free speech victory in NIFLA versus Becerra. So we're so thankful to have each of them here. We'll hear from them shortly. My remarks to set the stage are really very, very simple, and they are brief. The first freedom. When we turn to our beloved Constitution and then to the amendments to America's Constitution, we read about our first freedoms in 16 words of the first of the first freedoms. You can repeat the words with me. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, semicolon. Grammar is important, and it was important to the founding just as it is today. It is those words that set forth sort of primus inter pares, first among equals, before we get to the freedom of speech, the protection of the freedom of the press, the protection of the freedom, the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. We come to these precious freedoms that bring us together to discuss. And when we look back over the corridors of time, we see that while there have been many disagreements over the meaning of those 16 words, there emerged in the late 20th century a sort of rough consensus. And that rough consensus was embodied legislatively in the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which looked back upon the jurisprudence of the Supreme Court, and in particular a case called Wisconsin versus Yoder. I hope everyone knows that, because we'll be talking about later today what can we do to arm ourselves and equip ourselves to give a reason for the hope that is within us, and especially as friends of freedom. That act passed the House of Representatives unanimously, and then it passed the United States Senate 97-3, signed into law by President Clinton. This represented a major breakthrough in terms of the political bodies, the Article I and the Article II branches, coming together and saying, we want to restore a traditional understanding of religious freedom, that there's an enormous burden on government to justify a restraint, a significant restraint on religious liberty. The example of Wisconsin versus Yoder. The Amish community of Wisconsin, the old order Amish, felt strongly that high school was inimical to the preservation of their deeply faith-oriented culture. The state of Wisconsin had a law, perfectly respectable law, that required all children to remain in the public or private education setting through the 16th birthday. But under the old order of Amish view, once the child had completed the eighth grade, he or she had enough life skills or educational skills to carry on as a member of the old Amish community. And that was an almost unanimous decision of the Supreme Court. Congress smiled on that decision. The president smiled on that decision. But that was the 20th century. In the 21st century, we seem to have lost that consensus, or at least there's a serious erosion of it. And all too frequently now, we are hearing voices to the effect that religious freedom is simply a mask for discrimination or other antisocial behavior. So we're going to hear those stories, draw some lessons from it, and then come together to reflect as a community on what is to be done later this afternoon. Would you join me in welcoming Tom Glessner?
The issue before the court is, can the government be empowered to force a charitable, faith-based nonprofit, or for that matter, any group, to speak a message with which they fundamentally disagree?
I mean, because this is really about an industry trying to shut down its opponents. It's about the freedom to say what you think.
Absolutely.
With NIFLA and ADF are trying this case for free speech in the highest court in the land. You all are trying this case in the court of public opinion. So that is why it's so important that you're here to make your voices heard.
Our goal today is to create a really winsome and positive message outside of the Supreme Court.
We can't be compelled to say something that we don't believe.
We have to stand and fight until we win this battle. Win it for the babies and win it for their mothers.
We will win because of your prayers, because of your hard work, because this is the human rights struggle of our time.
Say give free speech life, which is our goal today.
I'm here because I support life and I support freedom of speech.
This is a battle really for the soul of our country.
This law is allowed to happen, the very heart and soul of the First Amendment will be gone. Nobody should be compelled to speak a message with which they fundamentally disagree.
The best part of what we do at ADF is to be able to stand alongside organizations like NIFLA and individuals who want to and are being a voice for life.
We're honored to serve you. We pray God's blessing upon you. God bless the Supreme Court and God bless America.
You see, you stand for something much bigger than the state of California here. You stand for something that is at the heart and soul of our nation. And the future and destiny of our nation is due to heroes like you because of your work. Love and mercy and justice flow like a river across this country, creating a culture of life. One day, your work will be acknowledged, and you will hear those words, "Well done, my good and faithful servants." It was a very big day, March 20th, 2018, and just some background. In 1982, Planned Parenthood of New York and Planned Parenthood around the nation became very concerned about the proliferation of pro-life pregnancy centers around the country. So they launched a campaign in the offices of New York Planned Parenthood to slander, smear, destroy, and close down the work of pro-life centers. Now, the line of attack they took and continue to this day are that these pro-life agencies of mercy and love and compassion are deceptive. They lie to women about abortion. They illegally practice medicine. They are fraudulent, and the government needs to step in and close them down. Oh, I forgot one more thing about them in their line. One of the worst things about these pregnancy centers really, really, is that they're religious ministries. Now, they would say, oh, don't get us wrong. Everybody has a right to practice their religion. I go to church myself. But when you take your narrow-minded, right-wing, bigoted, fundamentalist morality and impose that on a poor young woman who simply wants to exercise her constitutional right to abortion, shame on you. We've got to speak up and close you down. So that attack happened in the 80s. In the 90s, that great example of moral virtue, Elliot Spitzer, launched a huge campaign against the pregnancy centers in New York in 2002. Well, the good news is we've been able to beat them back, defeat them in legislatures, and even defeat them in court actions until 2015. The state of California passed a law they called the Reproductive Fact Act, which mandates that pro-life pregnancy centers, and particularly the pro-life medical clinics — these clinics, by the way, are medical — they offer ultrasound confirmation of abortion. And do you know when a mother sees her little child on the ultrasound screen, the impact that has on her choosing life? The statistics are phenomenal. But they launched this attack, mandating the pro-life medical clinics post a sign in their waiting area advising their patients on how to obtain a state-funded abortion with a phone number to call. This bill was followed up by the state of Illinois with a law mandating that all physicians, regardless of their opinion on abortion, refer for abortion. They'll lose their license if they don't. The state of Hawaii then followed up with a law that is virtually identical to California, with one major difference. In Hawaii, one of our centers operates inside the boundary, inside the building of a church, because they're housed in a church. So that means the church must post the sign advising women on how to get a state-funded abortion. Well, we sued in both Hawaii and Illinois. ADF, my great friend Kristen, I'm so happy to have been partnering with ADF and working on these cases. They're helping us. We sued. Of course, California's in the Ninth Circuit. So we expected to lose at the district court level on our motion for a preliminary injunction, and we did. We appealed to the Court of Appeals, and we expected to lose, and we did. Now the Supreme Court has 8,000 petitions filed each year, and they only hear 100. So our odds of getting above that aren't very, very good. But we got there. We got there. And the opinion, the day of the opinion, as I came out of the court, Kristen was out in front of the crowd. I was a little concerned about the opinion. It was a 5-4 opinion, but there were four justices on a concurring opinion. I didn't know what that thing said. So I was afraid of a fractured opinion. I know we knew we won something, and Clarence Thomas's opinion sounded pretty good. But Kristen meets me, she has the opinion, she shows me the Kennedy concurrence. God bless the man, you know, we've been critical of Justice Kennedy. I've been critical of Justice Kennedy, and he hasn't been the best for us in everything, but he really hit a home run on his concurring opinion in this case. And so the court struck down California's law, compelled speech that forces someone to speak a message which violates their fundamental belief is unconstitutional. Now, we followed that up. I can announce this. 2 weeks ago, the state of Hawaii has now backed away and agreed to the entry of a permanent injunction against their law. Illinois is next. We have a preliminary injunction against Illinois. We're very confident because of this case, NIFLA versus Becerra. My last comments. What would have happened had we lost? A war of annihilation would have been started against the work of pro-life centers across the country. And I mean that. Planned Parenthood for 30 years has been trying to figure out how to stop the work of these centers. If California's law had been upheld in all the blue states, it would have been adopted. In some of the purple states, you would have had attorneys general going after these centers. It would have been a war of annihilation where these pro-life centers would have been faced with the unconscionable choice, you either promote abortion or you close your doors. It would have affected churches, just like the church in Hawaii. Judge Starr said this, there are five freedoms in the First Amendment. I would argue that the heart and soul of that First Amendment are religious freedom, freedom of religion, and freedom of speech. Without those two, there is no pro-life movement in this country. Without those two freedoms, there is nothing in this country that we can do publicly to promote our moral values. But good news, we won. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. And congratulations. And speaking of winning, may we bring to the podium the world's most famous baker, Jack Phillips.
So much. Thank you, thank you.
Alliance Defending Freedom engages in litigation, legislative support, and public advocacy, and we are led by our President and CEO, Michael Ferris, who is a longtime CMP member. I'm sure most of you know Michael. And Michael also argued the case before the Supreme Court, the NIFLA case. And while ADF's international team is focused on fighting the persecution that occurs across this world to our brothers and sisters, the physical persecution, here at home we're seeing a much more polite persecution take root in the United States. Justice Alito warned of this persecution in his dissent in the same-sex marriage decision, where he said that those who believe have orthodox beliefs on human sexuality and on marriage will be vilified by the left. And we are seeing governments adopt and use laws, sexual orientation, gender identity, non-discrimination laws, to threaten and severely punish those who seek simply to live and speak consistent with the core tenets of all of the Abrahamic faith. And Jack Phillips is one of those people. In terms of Jack's case, hopefully you know the background facts. For 25 years, Jack has sought to live consistent with his faith and operate his business in a way that honors God. He had a same-sex couple come into his shop, ask him to design a custom cake celebrating their wedding. He politely declined, offered them anything else in his store, and even other custom cakes. They flipped him off, cussed him out, left, began to picket and boycott his store, and within 20 minutes, he started receiving hate-filled calls. They then filed a complaint with the Colorado Civil Rights Commission. 1 year from the date Justice Alito issued that dire warning in his dissent, the Supreme Court of the United States agreed to hear Jack's case. So we're going to follow a Q&A format, and I know you'd rather hear from him than me. So, Jack, take us back to that day that the Supreme Court agreed to hear your case. What happened?
Yeah, like Tom was saying, they get 7,000 or 8,000 cases presented every year. They turn away over 99%. And nobody really thought they would take ours, but they did. And so I was watching my computer, reading, had the page open to SCOTUS blog, and I see five words on there: Masterpiece Cake Shop has been granted. It took my breath away. I text my wife, I text my sisters, text my daughter, son. The only one I had to share it with was a homeless guy who's in the shop. So I turned to him and I said, I get to go to the Supreme Court. He said, yeah, I got to go to court on Wednesday. But it was a pretty exciting day.
I'm guessing your experience was a little different than his when you went to court.
Yeah, I didn't need a parole officer. I had you.
Well, one of the victories that I know we had that weren't necessarily a part of the decision, but involved a New York Times article. The New York Times hadn't been very kind to you over the 6 years of your litigation. And just before the oral argument, Adam Liptak came out, the Supreme Court reporter, and spent some time with you, a few hours. He ended by opening his piece saying, Jack bakes beautiful cakes, and it is not a stretch to call him an artist. I know that that was a real victory for you. So tell us a little bit about the work of Masterpiece and maybe some of the things you shared with Adam Liptak when he visited.
Yeah, that was a very flattering thing for him to write. On the wall in my shop, I also have an article from a little local newspaper in Colorado, in Lakewood, that said that walking into Jack's shop is like walking into an art gallery of cakes. And that was, to me, those two comments were the goal of why I opened the bakery. When I was a kid, I always liked to draw and paint and sculpt and all those things, sketching. And when I graduated high school, I had to get a job, and I ended up working in a bakery that a man across the street from me owned. And I found that I really loved baking. This is what I can do for a living. And then he bought out another bakery and brought in cake decorating. And I had never seen that. But when I did, I thought, that's what I can do. I'm going to open my own cake shop someday. I knew the name of it right away. It was going to be Masterpiece Cake Shop. Masterpiece says art, cake shop says cakes. You know you're not going to get a loaf of bread. So I used my cakes as a canvas to help people celebrate their special events. And Adam Liptak confirmed that in his article. That was really good.
And your case started off with an order from the Colorado Commission, and that commission ordered you basically to do three things. The first thing it ordered you to do is to report quarterly every decision that you made as a cake artist to decline to design any kind of cake.
For any reason.
Any reason. It also then said that you needed to re-educate your family and essentially tell them that you were wrong to operate your business right, consistent with your faith.
Yeah.
And then it said you need to either violate your conscience and do same-sex weddings, or you need to lose that portion of your business. How much was that?
The wedding cakes were probably 40% of our business at the time, so the choice was not difficult. It was clear we gave up our wedding business. It was also clear as far as re-educating my staff, my entire staff, not just my family, but my mom worked there, and my mom made it clear that she would not be re-educated. Yeah. But, yeah, to lose the 40% of the business was hard, but there are also other hard things. Like Kristen was saying, within 20 minutes of these two gentlemen leaving, we started getting hateful phone calls, death threats, including one where the gentleman said he told me what street he was on. He knew that my daughter was there with her daughter. I had to have them go, hide in the back, just go in the back, stay there till the police come, we get everything straightened out. And life was pretty difficult. My wife didn't even want to come to the shop sometimes because she didn't know what kind of situation there would be or what things would be like.
Now, during your case, there were three other cake designers that were asked to design cakes that had religious messages that took the opposite view of yours. They criticized same-sex marriage. And those cake artists declined to design those cakes. And someone filed a complaint with the commission saying that they should be forced to do that. How did that resolve, do you know?
Yeah, the same Civil Rights Commission that found me guilty of discrimination against these two men, although, like Kristen said, I offered them anything else in the store. I'll serve them anytime. I serve everybody who comes in the store. But the same Civil Rights Commission said that those three bakeries were free to decline those cakes because they presented a message that the bakers didn't want to fulfill. I don't get that option. We were personally attacked because of that.
And that became a key point in the case. On June 4th, Jack won his case before the Supreme Court. And in the decision, the court focused on three aspects of it. The first was to say that it's wrong for the government to target people because of their beliefs, that it's wrong to target them because of their religious beliefs in particular, and that it's wrong for the government to set up a double standard, applying one standard to the people they agree with and a different standard to those whom they want to ruin, such as Jack. It also took away the left's most vicious talking point, which is to say that someone like Jack, who declines to express messages based on what the message is rather than the person requesting it, accusing him of bigotry akin to racial bigotry. And the court said in its decision that reasonable people have beliefs about marriage being between a man and a woman, and that is based on reasonable religious and philosophical premises. Now, I want to ask you this. How did it feel to win on that day?
It felt great. again, I was at my computer watching SCOTUS blog, and I see this thing come over. It says, "We have masterpiece." My first thought was, is there another masterpiece out there? But it wasn't, and it looks like we win. So again, I'm texting everybody, and it was just a really fun day.
It was. One of the things that's important to remember is that the court doesn't decide cases in a vacuum. NIFLA and Masterpiece were before the Supreme Court at the same time. Masterpiece resolved Jack's case on free exercise grounds because the hostility was so egregious, it was so obvious, it didn't need to reach the free speech argument. But it resolved the NIFLA case on free speech grounds, and so now we have precedent in both areas. One of the reasons that that is critical to Jack is that, unfortunately, he's facing a new case. This is not over. Colorado has doubled down. They're refusing to recognize the Supreme Court's decision. And a transgender attorney called Jack on the day the Supreme Court agreed to hear his case and asked him to design a cake with the blue exterior, pink interior, celebrating his transition from a man to a woman. He knew Jack would not be able to design that custom cake. Jack politely declined, and now he again is facing another decision by the Colorado Executive Director of the Commission saying that he has violated the law. Jack, as we close, two things. Tell us, one, why didn't you just design the cake? And two, we are fighting back in federal court, asking the court to stop the Colorado Commission from its hostility. Why did you choose to go on offense here?
We had no choice but to go on the offense this time. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission has ignored the United States Supreme Court, and who directly addressed them in this case. But why didn't I just make the cake? For 25 years, we've tried our best to stand by our principles and do work that honors God in every way that we can. And this cake just, we couldn't create it, and we're not going to change our policies now. And we've got... We have the opportunity to, with ADF's help, to get this set right, hopefully, and we want to finish well.
Great. Thank you. Those are wonderful words, to stand by my principles. I think what we've heard today suggests that there are brave, bold men and women who are saying, the Supreme Court was right when it said during World War II, if there is any fixed star in our constitutional constellation, it is this. No official, high or petty, has the power to dictate what is orthodox in politics, religion, and belief. God bless America. Rebecca?
Ah.
Rebecca?
Thank you for a fantastic discussion, and thank you for inspiring all of us to put everything on the line for what we believe. We really appreciate all of you.